And welcome to Conversation, where our guest today is Robert Kennedy, campaign manager for his brother's presidential campaign, John Kennedy, the Democratic candidate, formerly counsel of the Senate Rackets Investigating Committee, and a very busy visitor to Kansas City today.
Nice to see you.
Very good to see you again. We haven't met since you were on Insight some time ago.
Oh, that's right.
Here in Kansas City.
Yes, I remember now.
Right after the wind-up of the Senate investigations,
that's
in
right.
Which you had a part. Well, how's the campaign going at this
point? Well, I think we're making some progress. I think Senator Kennedy's trips around the country have been a great impetus to the campaign, and so we're very satisfied. I don't think that we can take any area or section or state for granted, but I think that I think it looks very promising, and we're very encouraged.
To what degree do you go, how reliable as a barometer is the crowd turnout in a town?
Well, I think it's of importance. If you didn't get crowds, I think it'd be a matter of great concern.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get the crowd, I think then it depends on how enthusiastic they are about mm-hmm. the speech and how they feel about the candidate. So I think there are two factors. Number one, how large the crowd is, I think, is important. And then number two, how they greet the candidate
mm-hmm.
and their degree of enthusiasm.
I noticed. Go ahead.
Mr. Kennedy, I noticed that Doris Leeson had an editorial yesterday calling for some infighting from Senator Kennedy. She quoted his reserve as being kind of an insurmountable obstacle in campaigning, that the campaign was going to get very lively and they were looking for him to do some more direct replying to the hints or slurs, whatever you prefer to call him, that were leveled against him. How do you think that he will begin to do this?
Well, I just say, of course, he's had a good deal of success in his political life. He ran for Congress when nobody thought he could win. He ran for the Senate against Henry Cabot Lodge, the campaign manager of Eisenhower. Nobody thought he could win. He won in 1958 by 870,000 votes. Led the Democratic ticket by 500,000 in Massachusetts. He won in the state of Wisconsin, the primary there, when people said it was political suicide for him to go in. He won in West Virginia when nobody thought he had a chance. He won in all of the other primaries and nobody thought he had a chance. He won the Democratic nomination when people thought he didn't have a chance. So I would think that probably he knows his business reasonably well based on the past record. This is the way he campaigns, and he's based on the record, it's been successful. Now he's going to, as he moves along, he might take a different look at the situation. At the present time, we feel that it's going along successfully. Doris Leeson might think differently, but I trust
you can always get advice from columnists.
No, it wasn't a question of advice. I think it was the absence of active anger. When Lyndon Johnson was in town yesterday, he asked for a moratorium on hints and slurs that question the candidate as being naive on the communistic question or soft on communism. I noticed in Richard Nixon's speech last night, he again referred to what he called a naive attitude on communism. How would you reply to that?
Well, I would just say that every time that Vice President Nixon runs against anybody who disagrees with him, then the individual is naive on communism. Starting back in 1946, against his opponents, people called, he had an active telephone campaign, calling all the voters in the district, saying, did you know Jerry Voorhees was a communist? And then hanging up the telephone. And going on when he ran for the Senate against Helen Gahagan Douglas, the same kind of operation. And then 1952, 1956, 1958, Mr. Stevenson, Harry Truman, was covering up for communists in the government for political purposes. Mr. Stevenson was a communist coddler, and all of these other people. So now Senator Kennedy is critical of whether we are going to be able to stand up to the Soviet Union. That's the big question. And he feels it's not just a question of hurling insults or being exchanging insults over a conference table, it's being strong enough. And he feels, based on the record, and not just himself, but not just Democrats, but based on the record, he feels that we are falling behind. And he quotes the various generals who quit the military services on the basis that we are unprepared. He quotes Nelson Rockefeller, the governor of the state of New York, who's a Republican, who says that we are becoming a second-rate nation and that we should be spending more in the field of defense. He quotes the Mr. Gaither and the group, and were members of the Gaither Committee, which were appointed by Dwight Eisenhower, a group of businessmen, who said that we are in great danger in the United States. General White in the newspaper this morning, who's head of the Air Force, said that we had a bad attitude toward space exploration. All of these things concern him. Now, I suppose that under Mr. Nixon's criteria, Winston Churchill would have been naive toward the Nazis, because he was saying England was unprepared during the 1930s. It seems to me it's the same attitude.
Here's a little sugar for the tea out there.
Thank you.
Fine. We were talking about Doris Gleason, so that it leads naturally to this thought. In past years and past campaigns, I know many times there have been charges by one party or the other, but particularly by the Democrats, due to the Republican affiliation of a large number of newspapers, that press coverage might not be fair. Judging campaigns so far, do you feel the press coverage this trip is reasonably fair or not?
I think a lot of them are fair, but I wouldn't be honest with you if I didn't say that a number of them are extremely unfair. I mean,
is this a regional thing?
Well, I know a number of papers across the country are extremely unfair.
Would you object to naming them?
Well, I don't think that I'm not familiar with all of the newspapers, and I'm afraid that by leaving some of them out, that I might
you might leave out the worst of them.
You might miss a few. Mr. Kennedy, you referred to Adlai Stevenson, and this brought to mind something that during the campaign when Stevenson was running for president, as a Democrat, he asked then for stopping the nuclear testing, for a complete and total disarmament. It was suggested only recently that if it had been done then, it may have been done successfully. The Republicans at that time, unless I have my history backwards, opposed this idea, and I think even when you mentioned being called soft on communism, I think they said that Stevenson at that time was wrong in his end. Why hasn't this been pointed up more
strongly?
Well,
of course it is pointed out, and again, if you had some greater cooperation with some of the newspapers in the United States, you'd probably be able to point it out even more. But when Mr. Stevenson ran in 1956, he suggested that. But he suggested with very strong safeguards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2 years later, the administration, 3 years later, the administration put the same idea into effect with no safeguards.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we've stopped nuclear testing in the United States now without any safeguards whatsoever.
But it seems strange that the party that opposed the idea in the first place would later put it into operation themselves.
Well, of course, that's why we feel that... That in order to get these things done, why send the Kennedys running for the presidency? I think that that's a perfect example, of which there are many.
Mm-hmm.
During the course of these campaigns, there are many.
Let me ask one. This is just more or less from the personal or human point of view, but...
Could I just answer? Senator Kennedy has pointed that out,
has
pointed a number of these matters out. In many instances, the only way that he can... do it effectively, and where he can get a free voice in many of these cities is through radio and through television.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he uses it as much as he can, because otherwise, you can, in a number of instances, you can't get your story across.
I can see that's true.
Bob, you've come a long road now since the first thoughts of running for the presidency were developing, and it's probably had high spots and low spots. I would imagine the morning after West Virginia was a high spot. But what about the night before? How did you feel?
Oh, in West Virginia?
Yeah.
Well, we thought we made a good deal of progress, and felt that...
There was a lot hanging on that.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't there?
I think we would have been... I think Senator Kennedy would have had a very difficult time getting the nomination if he'd lost in West Virginia. So we were very apprehensive. We were more apprehensive, I suppose, 3 weeks before when we just began our fight there, and it looked so hopeless. But and we felt that we had made a good deal of progress, and then once you get wrapped up in the work, you don't think about all the problems as much.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mr. Kennedy, I noticed several times through the course of the Republican campaign that there is a strong suggestion, in fact, it's an outright statement in some cases, that leads you to believe it is unpatriotic to criticize anything that a citizen might construe to be a mistake of the administration. This puts you in a peculiar spot, because no one likes to be told that by criticizing the opposition we're giving fodder to the Russian.
Yes.
How do you feel about this kind of charge? It seems to me to be a kind of unfair way to play the game.
Yeah. Well, I think, of course, it's, as I said, this is the old technique that if we're criticizing the United States, pointing out that the Russians have a flag on the moon, the United States does not, and pointing out what is happening in South America and the countries that used to be such close friends of ours, what is happening in Cuba, and we hear on the radio this morning that they recognize North Korea and communist China, and here's Cuba only 90 miles off our coast,
mm-hmm.
pointing out the inroads that the Soviet Union has made, that then you become giving the communists comfort. It just seems to me Senator Kennedy has made a calculated decision that he feels that the American people will not accept that, and that they will want to know and have him discuss the facts.
Mm-hmm.
If on November 8th, if he finds out differently, he wouldn't change it anyway. He feels that this whole election is not just the question of the Democratic Party or he as an individual, but it's a question of whether the United States is going to move forward, and really a question of survival, or whether we are going to become so soft here in this country. And when I was telling them this morning, when Mr. Nixon was in the debate, the so-called debate with Mr. Khrushchev, which the Republicans enjoy referring to so much, and Mr. Khrushchev pointed out these things to Mr. Nixon, that they were ahead in space exploration, that they were ahead in the field of missiles. Mr. Nixon shook his finger under Mr. Khrushchev's nose and said, you might be ahead in these fields, you might be ahead in space exploration and missiles, but we in the United States have better color television. And it seems to me that this is this is what this election is about, whether we are going to accept that as a judgment of our civilization or whether we're going to feel that there's something better.
You know, it seems to me this is very much what this election might be about, too. But I don't really get that in the as much in the speeches as I do the feeling that this is the case. Will this theme become more dominant?
Well, of course, once again, it's difficult just from reading the newspapers. That's what Senator Kennedy has hit, and that's what he hit on his nationwide broadcast, and that's mm-hmm. what his theme has been all across the country, that this is what this election is about, whether we're going to move forward or whether we're going to stand still and accept the status quo, whether we're going to stick our heads in the sand or whether we are going to feel that the country can do better. As he has said, Mr. Nixon goes before the public and says, you never had it so good. And he comes before them and says, we can do better. And that he's not making any promises to the American people, but says it's going to be a decade of sacrifice and problems. And that he's not going to say that he is elected president, that the problem in Cuba is going to disappear, or South America, that it's mm-hmm. going to be a very difficult time. But unless mm-hmm. we're ready to face it, the problem is going to get even greater. So this is, he has said this. He's whistle-stopped mm-hmm. through California, he said it through Texas, and he said it in all sections of the United States. And as we pointed out today, Mr. Nixon now, as he said last night, that this shows a naive attitude that Senator Kennedy should be talking about our weaknesses and giving comfort to the communists. Now, mm-hmm. And then he says that this is a policy of surrender. Now, it just doesn't seem to me that, this is a question whether the American public is going to accept that. They've accepted. And this is the same policy, a technique that he's used mm-hmm. in all his campaigns in the past. I don't think that they are going to accept it. I just think that the people want to listen to the facts.
Mr. Kennedy, as a private citizen, does it frighten you to be told that we will achieve victory because our cause is right and just? This is a theme that consistently runs through the opposition's speeches, as well as this idea that to criticize the administration is an unpatriotic act. Does the idea that criticism or negative remarks make you an unpatriotic person, does this frighten you to see
well,
it happen?
Well, yeah, I've come to accept it. As on your first part about the fact that we're going to win because we're right, it reminds me of what I believe Abraham Lincoln said, that during the war between the states, that both sides prayed to the same God. So one side, that in of itself is not going to win
yeah.
win the battle for you. And unless we are prepared here in this country, we're going to have a very difficult time. On the question of this technique by the Republicans and by Mr. Nixon and the head of the Republican Party, Mr. Morton, yesterday, really challenging the patriotism of Senator Kennedy. Obviously, it's a matter of some, it disturbs, but I'm not sure it's not expected.
Well, gee whiz, this is interesting. I'll tell you what, just by the clock, we have to pause here for just a second for pinpoint weather.
For many housewives, the problem of where to begin in decorating a home can be a pretty dismal one. Waverly Bonded Fabrics offers a solution used by professional decorators. Begin with fabric, and Waverly has made the job easier by designing five exciting, coordinated fabric wardrobes. Each fabric wardrobe consists of one pattern fabric and two beautifully coordinated plain fabrics. The Helvetia Group, for instance, has a kind of international flavor that is gay and charming. The pattern fabric is called Swiss Village and was inspired by the present costumes of Interlaken, the famous Swiss resort. The coordinated plain fabric of this group are of lustrous glow sheen. The Helvetia Group can make your room look bright and inviting, yet give it that envied quality of carefree elegance, and that's the mark of a professional decorator. Why not take advantage of the decorating miracles that Waverly's fabric wardrobes can perform for you? Look for these and all the other lovely Waverly Bonded Fabrics at your favorite store. Waverly Bonded Fabrics is a division of F. Schumacher & Company, 60 West 40th Street, New York. You mentioned Senator Fulbright. I don't remember the exact thing that he wanted disclosed, but there is a man who has done a biography of Vice President Nixon, and I believe Senator Fulbright has asked that the complete transcript of a certain debate between Khrushchev and Nixon be made public because
right.
He felt it was being presented with a prejudiced air from the man who wrote the biography of...
Well, Earl Mazel who's a reporter for the Herald Tribune, wrote a biography on Vice President Nixon, and then a series of articles appeared last week showing taken from the transcript of the exchange between Mr. Khrushchev and Mr. Nixon
in Moscow,
showing, according to him, that Mr. Nixon really stood up to Mr. Khrushchev. Now, this debate or exchange has been labeled top secret by the State Department. Nobody else can see it. And Mr. Senator Fulbright said that this should be made available to the American people. Certainly Mr. Khrushchev, who are we keeping it secret from? Certainly not Mr. Khrushchev, because he was present during the time of the exchange. And so that therefore it's nothing that's going to help or assist the communists. And that yet they allow one reporter to evidently study the transcript, write a series of articles on it, and nobody else can see it and nobody else can read it because it's secret. And he said that this just doesn't make any sense. If Mr. Nixon really stood up to Mr. Khrushchev, why don't we let the American people see it? It can't certainly help the communists.
Mm-hmm. It would be very interesting.
State Department doesn't see it that way.
You must have to go at a fantastic pace and keep tremendous hours at this time. I'm just curious, for a man who is as busy and importantly busy as you are, how do you break it? What do you do when you try to take a moment of relaxation?
what relaxation?
Or are you able to?
President
Roosevelt used to relax and read a mystery story right in the middle of the war if necessary in order to just, break away from it for a moment.
Yeah, well, I think I'd do the same thing. And I think to do the same thing. And then I think we figure that it's a relatively short time that it's going to be over. And each period was, whether we were working in January in Wisconsin, you figure it was going to be over April 5th, the primary there, so you could try to survive till then, the next one till May 10th in West Virginia.
You're like a man who's driving to California. You just drive to the next town
and now we just figure that we get six more weeks so we can survive that.
And hope we get a room with a shower.
and then if you win,
so then we worry
you
about
won't
that.
Exactly be able to take a long rest then either.
We'll worry then.
Mr. Kennedy, in Strategy of Peace, which I admit to not having read completely, your brother discussed the two problems that were most vital to the country. One he called the missile gap and the other the economic gap. And he said that if by economic influence Russia was able to lead to the fall of India, China, Asia, Africa, and so forth, to communism, that we would be lost. We would be drowned, as it were, in an economic victory. Now, he had said at that time that we gave money to underdeveloped countries largely from crisis to crisis, that the money was allotted when things had come to such a stage in that country that they almost had to have it in order to survive and remain our friend. At that time, I think he proposed a nebulous plan that would see some system of allotting monies for underdeveloped countries in advance of a crisis.
Yes.
Now, there are many underdeveloped countries, and certainly to allot that much money would be a fantastic undertaking. Does Senator Kennedy still subscribe to this idea?
Well, he feels that in the long run that this is going to save us money. Now, for instance, in South America, the tremendous problem that we have, this book was written before the problem in Cuba.
There were a series of speeches, weren't
they? Yes, and taken from his speeches, and his reference to this matter was written before. And then we had the trouble with Mr. Castro in Cuba, and a month ago, the State Department announced that they were going to allocate $500 million to help and assist in South America. Well, the countries of South America call it Mr. Castro's loan, because they say that the United States would never help them out before, never was interested in. Now they find that Mr. Castro, that the communism has come to Cuba. Now suddenly the United States is interested in South America. No longer are we interested in South America because we want to help South America. No longer are we interested because of the good neighbor policy. But we're interested only because we feel that now we're in danger ourselves. So it ruins the goodwill that might come from the allocation of some money to help and assist. And it's at least as of now, it's going to almost be too late as far as some of the problems have been created there. He feels that if you met these problems early, that you had a joint venture with other countries and tried to help and assist these countries, that you wouldn't have these problems plaguing you in 8 or 10 years. And obviously now these countries of Africa, which we have ignored for the last 8 years, we knew that they were breaking out into independence. We knew that they were going to get their independence during this period of time. There wasn't any question in anybody's mind. And there are going to be others during the 1960s, that we start to devote some attention to them and not wait till they break out in independence, announce that they're going to the Soviet Union, and then say, well, we'll give you a couple of hundred million dollars if you remain friendly to us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's his, he feels, in the long run. Having some policy and having some frame of reference that we could avoid many of these problems and difficulties and in the long run save ourselves, heartbreak and lives and everything else.
To a degree, the Marshall Plan worked that way,
That's
didn't
right.
it? Communism wasn't actually at the doors of Italy and France. It was just a pretty good possibility.
Yeah. That's what our policy really has been in the last 8 years, is just a reaction to everything the Soviet Union does. We haven't taken the initiative, really, in any of these fields, and that's what we don't have really any sympathetic feeling toward the people of Africa now. I mean, there's not the great feeling toward their leadership and the United States that there had been during the days of Franklin Roosevelt, for instance. And there's no reason why there shouldn't have been. I mean, when this administration came in 1953, I think a lot of people voted for it on the basis that it would be a new era, that it would be, in fact, a crusade to do things that needed to be done, and nothing has been done. And I think that that's, again, what this election is about, whether we're going to do something in these fields.
There's always the voter who sits out there and says, when you say do something, it means money, large quantities. And when you say aid to underdeveloped countries beyond what's done now, this means more money. And then he wonders if his taxes will be going up.
I think that that's obviously going to be a problem. Senator Kennedy believes in certainly economic responsibility here in the United States. He's the one that sponsored the Hoover Commission reports. Mm-hmm. He got 30 of those bills through because he felt that it was important. He fought for that. President Hoover wrote him a letter and said that he was the one that had led the fight for it. He passed another bill through, which former President Hoover said would save the government some $4 billion, and he guided it through and the Congress, and it's never been put into effect by the administration. So, I mean, he is very conscious of that field also. It's not a question of him going off and being a big spender, because he feels that it's extremely important that the integrity of the dollar be maintained here in the United States.
I'd like to see just how charitable an enlightened Democrat could be in regard to former President Hoover. In past Democratic campaigns, and I haven't noticed it in this one, it was common to still campaign against Mr.
Yes.
Hoover.
Yes.
And on the other hand, though, I do hear many very devoted Democrats say that they feel that Hoover was a much better man than he was given credit
yes.
for.
Yes, oh, I don't think there's any question about that. I think he's a great patriot who has made major contributions to the United States. I think he inherited a situation from the Republican administrations of Harding and Coolidge. I think probably his greatest mistake was while he was in their cabinet, not taking steps, not taking a more forceful line, that so that when he inherited it, just as really Mr. Chamberlain during the 1930s inherited to a large degree Baldwin's policies.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that he inherited them during the 1920s. And I think that he made major contributions in the Hoover Commission studies for economy and government, and I think that certainly President Truman feels the same way.
Mr. Kennedy,
so.
One more question before you go, and this is strictly from a layman's point of view. I read Senator Kennedy's farm program, and I have read Vice President Nixon's farm program, and to my undistinguished eye, there doesn't seem to be a great deal of difference between them. Is there a vital difference that I'm missing, and perhaps many of our listeners?
Well, to tell you the truth, his speech was just yesterday, Vice President Nixon. I haven't had a chance to read that.
Oh, I see.
So I couldn't tell you about that.
Well, we've delayed you, I'm afraid. And
you've been very kind.
You have the assembled press, I think, in wait over there with no end of barbed questions.
So thank you. You're very kind to invite me. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Nice to see you.
Yes, sir. Very nice to see you again. Let's see, who else can we talk to here as long as we're... There.
Congressman Bowling is just sliding in.
It's good to be back with you again.
Thank you. It's nice to have you back.
And by way of greeting you, sir, we want to present you with this beautiful embossed and engraved station break. Here it is. Okay. Here we are back again. Well, Mr. Kennedy goes out the door, and Congressman Bowling comes in, and thank you.
Well, it's good to be with you again.
You realize,
I said to begin with,
for 30 minutes we would have been talking to each other, and we're about talked out.
Well, I'm sure that would have been fun for both of you, but it's a great pleasure for me to have a chance to fill in for Bob. Bob, as you said, had to go over to a press conference. We've got him here for most of the day, and he's got a really tough schedule. He didn't get to sleep last night until about 3 o'clock in the morning. They had some weather up in Nebraska, whence he came.
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't give him very much sleep, I'm afraid. I only think he got 3 or 4 hours, but that's sort of typical of him. I've been working with him for a couple of weeks in a project that you may or may not know about that I find fascinating.
What's that?
Well, they set up for the first time a congressional liaison committee in the National Committee. Ordinarily, you know, the member of the House or the candidate running for the House of Representatives sort of gets orphaned in a national campaign. He falls between the two groups, the national ticket and the top candidates, the senator and governor, and the local ticket, and not much attention gets paid to him. And we feel this year that the election is so important, the Kennedys feel that this year the election is so important, that they really want to make a team effort out of it. So I'm the chairman of a committee of members of Congress, which is trying to work with all the candidates for the House of Representatives all over the United States and see that we give them a lot of help from the National Committee, just as much as we possibly can, and at the same time that we have a team effort out of it. And I'll tell you, it's a really fascinating thing working with Bob Kennedy.
I imagine it would be. Is this strategy, to put it very bluntly, part of the strong organizational feeling that you get when you see the way the Kennedy campaign has been working?
I think they're very good organizers, but the thing that has impressed me more and more, pretty obviously I wasn't for Kennedy prior to the convention, I was a Simonton man.
We've got that one on tape.
That's right, you do. I was a Simonton man.
If this were Russia, you'd have to recant about now.
Well, I'd either have to recant or be sent to Siberia, but fortunately I now have a job with a successful candidate, and it's fascinating. Because I heard, of course, what Bob said in answer to your very good questions, and This is the feeling that you get when you work around that headquarters. Actually, I've just come back from being in Washington for 3 or 4 days. And you feel with almost everybody that's working in there, and there are a lot of people, that this election means a whole lot more to them than a party victory or a personal victory. These are really dedicated people. I could name names, but there's not much point in it because they wouldn't mean anything to people out here. But they work practically around the clock, and they work steadily, and you've got a feeling of real conviction that they're fighting for something beyond themselves and beyond just a party victory, which is very impressive to me.
Mm-hmm. It is generally. There has been some criticism of Senator Kennedy's delivery, and this is more of an orator's criticism than anything else. And yet, as you say, when you watch Senator Kennedy, and when we spoke to his brother, Bob, today, you have a feeling that there may not be much flowery oratory and histrionics very evident, but there is an tremendous...
Emendous, I like that.
You like that word, emendous?
Emendous.
Because I got up the whirly. There's a tremendous sincerity and a real consideration of every question that you ask. There isn't any flip answer to any of them.
Well, I think that's absolutely
Nick,
so.
That'll be fine.
Thank you. I think this is absolutely so, and the thing that's interesting about it is that it permeates all the way down into the gals that push the typewriter keys and do an awful lot of work and work an awful lot of free hours because mm-hmm. they really believe in mm-hmm. what they're doing. I wish all the American people could get a chance to see the internal operation of that headquarters.
You know,
it's really impressive.
Bob Kennedy, I've seen him once before, and several times before, in fact, because I watched him operate at the convention in Los Angeles. I think the best description of him I can think of, it just hit my mind. He's a relaxed dynamo.
Well, that's a very interesting that's a very interesting phrase, but I think it's pretty good description.
Better than tremendous.
He's a man of tremendous energy, who's very sure that he's headed in the right direction, so that he mm-hmm. doesn't get very much upset about anything. For example, last night he came in very late after a tremendously difficult day in Nebraska, very tiring day, perfectly relaxed, not upset about anything. Mm-hmm. They'd had a tough time; things had gotten fouled up, the weather had fouled them up. No complaint. He just went off to bed, and we told him what time we had to have him in the morning, and there he was back again, cheerful, and going to work.
I must say, in justice, though, that this seems to be a quality, this dedication and strength of conviction, that both candidates display.
Well, I don't think there's any question that Mr. Nixon is able to present himself in this guise. I, as you know, haven't been in politics quite as long as Mr. Nixon.
You've been in there long enough to take that question and do pretty well with it.
I'll say you did.
In 1948, of course, I was elected for the first time, and Nixon had just completed his first House term. But it just happens that the first man he ran against, Jerry Voris, had been a friend of mine for a long time, so I knew a lot about that campaign. And there just is no question that Vice President Nixon is probably the cleverest political technician in the United States. And I think the problem that we in the Democratic Party at all levels have is to make the people see through this sort of cover. His record is something that ought to be studied. His record, in some cases, at least his record in words, his own words, it meets itself coming down the street. He's been on all sides of most issues. His record in Congress, far from being that of the kind of moderate liberal he's attempting to present himself at, is that of a very, very conservative person. And I think that the real test in this election is one that I'm not very much afraid of, is whether or not the American people can see to reality, see what is sham and what is real. And I'm pretty sure that I know what the result will be, and if they see it early enough and enough of them see it, it'll be an overwhelming result.
Do we ever owe equal time? So incidentally, in non-political seasons, no one really worries too much about that. They certainly do now. You know, I think if a candidate for office were to pass by this program while we're on the air discussing the growing of daisies and the candidate happened to cough audibly, his opponent would wire us saying, "I want to cough on your program," and I don't blame him.
Well, I hope we have an opportunity to give equal time.
Well, we will, I think it's the reason I thought I better mention it right in here because... who was our guest Friday?
Hmm?
Oh, Senator Johnson. Senator Lyndon Johnson.
And
was
Nathan
in here
Stark.
Friday, and Nathan Stark, and it got fairly Democratic, and this certainly is, you wouldn't call this a Republican tent meeting here today. so that it's necessary to remind our audience that we are still riding the center of the seesaw and that there will be balancing time all the way. Because obviously there will be some in the audience who probably are saying by now, what's this?
I imagine there are.
One more thing. May I quickly tell that we're recording this Saturday morning for the Monday afternoon conversation show.
At a very early hour.
And yeah, at a very early hour, in order to catch Bob Kennedy while he's in town.
May I ask you a question? Are you going to going to give the Republicans equal time at the same hour?
Oh, I hope not.
Make up, come down at 8:30 in the morning.
Gene, you don't like that very much, do you?
That one gets me up at 6 on my day off.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing. You're lucky. I don't think any of us who are running for office or working in this campaign on a full-time basis have any days off anymore.
Yes, no. I thought of that as soon as I said it and reviewed your comments about Mr. Kennedy not having had any sleep.
Another reason I thought I better mention it, Max Breton is sitting right there, and the audience is liable to think that there's nobody in his restaurant at the noon hour because there's no sound effects. He was kind enough to open up here on Saturday morning and let us do this so that we could catch these distinguished guests.
I have a question to ask you that I was going to ask Mr. Kennedy, and if you prefer, you don't have to make a comment on it, but in listening to Mr. Nixon's speech last night, he several times said that the overriding issue was to keep the peace. Now, granted that everyone is concerned with keeping the peace in this uncertain time right now, but he said all other issues, I believe I'm quoting him right, were subordinate to this one.
I don't think there's any question that the overriding issue is to achieve a permanent peace. And certainly in my mind, the only way you're going to do that is by having a really effective, controlled, worldwide disarmament. But the only way, in my judgment, that you have any chance of achieving the peace. There is no peace in this world today. There is, at the very least, a continuing Cold War that gets hot here and there practically every day. To achieve it, we have to follow one or another approach. Now, the Nixon approach, the Vice President's approach, appears to be one of saying that everything is just fine. That if we just do what we've been doing, which is, in my judgment, not very much, that then everything's going to be dandy. Our approach, and I think this goes from the top of the ticket all the way down to the right down the lowest possible level of the ticket, is that we have not been doing enough, we the people of the United States, not just we the politicians of the United States, that if we are to achieve a peace, if we are to arrive at that time when we can use our resources for the benefit of people in toto rather than spending so much of our money in what is essentially the negative task of maintaining armament, that we have to be strong so that the Russians will understand that we have the will, the determination to go on indefinitely, if necessary, to preserve the peace. And the point that Mr. Kennedy, Senator Kennedy's making, and making it very well, is that at the moment, relatively speaking, we have allowed ourselves to fall behind. This is what Governor Rockefeller has said. This is what the Rockefeller reports have said. I looked over just a simple list of the firings of missiles and the weight that the Soviet was able to put up and the weight that the United States was to put up and the schedules of what's projected. These are estimates. It makes it very clear that we're years behind the Soviet Union in the missile field, and we're behind in many other areas. And what Senator Kennedy and people like myself feel is that we are capable of doing a great deal more in order to achieve the peace.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask one about the what has been called the rump session of Congress. The Reporter magazine carries an article this week stating that that it's very strange that this session after the convention was held, in view of the fact that it was almost predictable that nothing could happen, and further raising the question that if Mr. Rayburn had put the pressure on in the House to the degree that Mr. Johnson did in the Senate, some of it might have gotten through. Now,
I don't happen to agree with that. I think it was too bad that we had the session because it seemed to me pretty evident that we weren't going to do very much, but great many people honestly felt that another effort had to be made, at bills that had been blocked before by threats of veto or by the action of the conservative coalition. And there's no point in pretending that some Democrats weren't working in that coalition. Some of them, I'm afraid, I think of as Republicans with a Southern accent rather than Democrats.
Well, do you have to help reelect them?
Well, some, yes. What I want to do is elect a Democratic president, because even if we have a few conservative Democrats and the kind of majorities that we have now with a Democratic president, we can pass a program.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the key thing of what happened to the 86th Congress, and it was utterly predictable. As a matter of fact, the first newsletter that I wrote after the election in 1958 brought out this point that we were not dealing in a normal situation, that one-third plus one, which is all that's needed to sustain a veto, was going to control the destinies of the 86th Congress, and I think it's very clear that that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
The veto, or the threat of it, really made it impossible for us to put through a program. Now, the tendency on the part of some people is to say, look, you had these tremendous majorities, why couldn't you perform? We couldn't perform because we had a president who fought us tooth and toenail and worked with the conservative coalition in Congress, which consists of virtually all the Republicans and a few of the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, what about this matter that the reporter raises? I know you're very close to Speaker Rayburn and would be the right man to give a defense of his actions in this connection.
I think he was totally powerless. One of the things that we tend to fool ourselves on is the influence of any legislator, even the Speaker, who's clearly the most powerful single legislator in the House, his influence on other people. Let's say he was concerned about the inaction of the Rules Committee, as he might well be. The Rules Committee is a committee that nominally is 8-4 Democratic. It actually is 6-6 conservative versus liberal moderate. Two of those conservatives are Democrats. All four of the Republicans are conservatives. These are men, and let's face it, these are men who aren't just politicians, these are principled politicians. These are men who are utterly, totally conservative. They really feel that the way for the United States to get along is to do less and less. And mm-hmm. this is a perfectly legitimate view for them to hold, with which I obviously totally disagree. And Mr. Rayburn just couldn't influence them. Nobody can. Mr. Eisenhower hasn't been able to influence some of those Republican members on occasion when he wanted bills to come out of the Rules mm-hmm. Committee. Lots of other people have tried. These are men who just happen to be in a position to serve as a roadblock to the action of the majority of the House. Incidentally, this is one thing that I hope we'll do something about in January. I think this tyrannical power in the hands of a few is a very, very bad situation in a democracy.
Yeah, it's been a stumbling block for years and years. Well, right now, we have just a minor stumbling block to leap over with great agility. It is a brief pause for station identification. There you are. See, it was really brief. Now then, Jean Glenn, were you going to ask something?
Oh, I was going to. In the paper last night, there was a small squib that the Commissioner of Labor said that the cost of living has steadily risen since last January, and that he doesn't look for it to come down any, but expects it to continue to rise. Now, if you are successful in the election, do you know any of the plans toward combating this higher cost of living and at the same time guaranteeing the farmers the full support that has been promised them and the foreign underdeveloped countries the increased monies that we are also more or less promising
them?
Well,
now, Senator Kennedy's talked a good deal about the problem of economic growth, which I think is the basic controversy between the two parties and the basic intellectual difference that there is on domestic affairs. I think he feels, and I frankly haven't had a chance to discuss this with him for some time, but we're both members of the Joint Economic Committee, the Joint Economic Committee faced this problem, I think, probably more directly in a report early this year than it's ever been done. I think that the general feeling that we would have would be that this administration has had a very, very tight monetary policy, which has helped increase interest rates. You can't say cause because there are other factors involved. But a very loose fiscal policy. That is, its tax policy, its policy with regard to budget surplus in good times and so on has been very loose. After all, this is the administration that ran the greatest single so-called peacetime deficit in all the history of the United States. As you know, I don't consider this really peace, but they call it peace on that side, so I guess they have to stay with this being a peacetime deficit in their own terms. Now, I think that Senator Kennedy and the Democratic approach will be to place greater reliance on fiscal policy. In other words, to have a more responsible fiscal policy. not to be afraid to run a deficit, for example, in a time of great national emergency or in time of depression, but to make up those deficits by having surpluses in good times. Now, the core of your ability to do this gets into a very, very touchy field, and that's the field of tax reform. I am convinced that for the United States to face its responsibilities around the world and at home to its own people, that we're going to have a massive tax reform. The tax system today is grossly inequitable. The chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, Mr. Mills, and of course that's the Tax Writing Committee, had an article in one of the great national magazines not too long ago in which he pointed out, it was a number of months ago, in which he pointed out that two men living in the same community with houses side by side on the same street but getting their incomes from different sources would have entirely different tax burdens. And this is ridiculous. We have to get equity back into the system, and we also have to do something about the terrible erosions that have been made to the tax base. I know these figures will sound fantastic, but some of the technicians in the field say that our tax base is eroded to the tune of more than $100 billion. Well, if this is correct, and if we could get that money back into the taxable, in effect, then we would have a take at the same rates that would enable us to do a great many of these things. And if we wanted to increase incentives to business for investment, which I think we need to do, then we perhaps could cut the rate somewhat if we had the base restored and have a much healthier situation, which would make it possible for us to use fiscal and monetary policy to restrain inflation.
I think I read that article when it came out, didn't it? Are we down to 1 minute?
I hope you read it in the Reader's Digest in a very digested form, because we're down in the last 1 minute.
I think it should be
in
good
fact,
news
we're 10 seconds into it.
All right. Good news to our listeners to know that in this same article, that man felt that the tax system was aggressive to the middle-class income, that it taxed more of the middle-class income than was necessary.
Oh,
good news, you know.
All righty now. Well, just time enough to sort of polish off the caboose of the program by saying that our guest, well, the one we've just been talking to, if you didn't recognize his voice, Congressman Richard Bolling of the 5th District of Missouri, a very prominent member of the House of Representatives, and our previous guest, Robert Kennedy, campaign manager for his brother, Senator Kennedy, and you just may have heard that he's running for president. Tomorrow's guest is Dr. Ian Stewart, lecturer and writer, a winner of the Freedoms Foundation Award. Barbara Ashton from UKC will be along Wednesday. And I could go on like this for hours, but I can't because our time is up. We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, Walt, will you just make that?